Star Market Celtics tonight continues from the American Airlines Arena in Miami. Been 14 months since we've been here. Our conversation with the head coach brought to you by Star Market's Just For You digital app. Earn rewards and save on your groceries and gas. Download the Star Market mobile app or visit starmarket.com. Let's go off the board. They were asking you about RJ Hunter. Now, Max and I talked about it last night. It's now official. And if I remember this correctly, you used to place phone calls to him saying, as soon as you get sick of your dad, come play, come to Butler, right?
Yeah.
Way back when.
No, it's good to have him back, and he's been through a lot. But this is the life of the typical professional basketball player, right? Not everybody is Kyrie Irving or, you know, the guy that can pretty much draw a headline every single minute of every single day with his play. Most guys have to work their way. There's ups and downs, and you've got to handle that, and he's done a great job, and we're excited to have him back. And you know, the guy that he worked out with here the most was Brandon Bailey. And so now Brandon gets a chance to be his head coach, and you know, we'll see him quite a bit.
Those are the great stories. It's one of the a player who, you know, who speaks highly of you constantly to the point where almost unprompted was Gerald Green. And he was a guy who went through that exact same thing. He was in the league, and then he was out of the league, and then your life can go two ways from there. And you realize how rare those stories are of the guys who end up fighting their way back.
No doubt. And in an ironic twist, signing Gerald Green probably was the reason we had to waive RJ.
Right.
And that's just the nature of this business. It's not an easy one. I said in the pregame meeting, having 16 contracted guys going into that preseason meant we had one really tough decision to make. And, you know, but kudos to RJ for working hard. And again, we're excited to have him back. I think he's improved in the areas he's need to improve. And I think he's on a good upward trend.
It's funny you should mention 16 guys and having so many guys, because watching the games in the homestand, those last few minutes of games, is it almost the dream scenario? We know the difficulties because you're asked about them all the time, about having so many guys and so few minutes to play everybody. Is the dream scenario games like last night, where not only you have them under control, but it's almost as if the guys who are playing at the end want to play not only well because they don't get an opportunity, but also for the other guys on the team? There's a sort of camaraderie about rooting for each other. That's almost the best case, right?
Well, first of all, the guys that go in at the end of the games are usually the ones who get the hardest cheers from the bench, because they know that those guys have put in the time. They know that those guys aren't getting the rewards of playing time that other guys are, and they know that is not an easy position to be in. So first and foremost, your whole team wants to see them do well. I say this all the time, especially when we're sitting there in the summer and talking about the final roster moves and anticipating guys that might be your 13th, 14th, or 15th guy. I always talk about the need for, you know, to know that when we put them in a 20-point game, that it will stay in that range, because that can change quickly in the NBA. And, you know, last night, with 16 minutes left in the game, 4 minutes left in the third, when we take out Al and Kyrie, my goal is not to put those guys back in.
Yep.
That's the number one thing that I'm trying to manage the rest of the game, especially with Al with his minutes restriction. And so it's really, really good to have everybody on the bench ready and coming in there and just adding to what's already going on.
And the back-to-back, obviously. The first question you got last night after the game, I thought this was really interesting. It was something along the lines of how nice it must be to not need Kyrie. When some of the best games this team has played this year were when Kyrie, quote-unquote, doesn't have a big game, which to me completely misunderstands what it is Kyrie brings when he's on the floor.
Well, I think it's, you know, obviously everybody looks first and foremost at the stat sheet, how many points you score, how many assists you get, and that's how they qualify what a big game is. But there's a lot of other ways to impact the game, and sometimes with a guy of his caliber just standing there and being a threat is huge, huge impact for the other four guys. In fact, every night that's the case. You know, we play against 29 different teams, and maybe you see 10 or 11 that blitz people regularly, night in, night out, if you turned on NBA League Pass. For the most part, 29 teams blitz us because they have to blitz Kyrie, and that's because of the threat he is, especially off of actions.
of the 29 teams, I think we're at about 22 or 23 that you've seen. One that you haven't, obviously, is Miami, which is so strange to see Brooklyn and Miami for the first time here at midseason.
Especially considering we didn't see Miami after December 21st.
Right, last year, including in the last time here, obviously, you had a 16-game winning streak going.
I remember.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. But for the few that don't have our kind of crazy memory about dates and games or whatever, it is the first time since then. Go ahead. You must have something really clever.
You know what's funny about that is I don't remember the game we won in the middle of that streak here at all. Don't remember a single bit of it until I turned on the film this week. But I remember both the end of that streak and then the loss at home on December 21st pretty well.
Yeah, funny about that.
It's funny what's into your mind.
See, this is better than therapy because
I just laid down.
You just learned about yourself. It was so bizarre. There were two games in Atlanta and two games in Miami during that streak. It was just bizarre how the schedule was playing out. All right, one thing going on with the Heat here, with the injury to Dragic, they've been playing Winslow, a point guard. A couple of things happened, but how often are we having conversations about 6'6", multiple position defenders, when they play Winslow, point guard, with Whiteside out there, the other four guys are exactly that.
And their backup point guard is Wade.
Yes.
So
you may have heard of him.
This is a long, versatile team, an athletic team. I think getting Waders back has given their offense a good jolt in the games that he has played. Obviously, he had a monster game here against us last year when they stopped our streak. But this is a really good basketball team, exceptionally well coached, both ends of the floor, and quite a challenge. And I know our guys are looking forward to it.
Now, when they go to that second unit, it's interesting. I know you were talking about this before the game. Max and I were mentioning this last night that there's this trend almost. You're seeing a lot more zone lately. They play zone a lot because they're very long with that second unit. Now, it seems to the uninitiated at the very simplistic level, zone against a team that's shooting very well doesn't seem like a great idea. What is the merit of playing zone against a team that is shooting extremely well?
Well, I think sometimes you do it because, you can throw a curveball. Sometimes you throw that curveball and it works and you just kind of stay with it. And sometimes it doesn't. I think a lot of teams have played a limited amount. These guys have played a little bit more. We've seen it in three of our last four games, which is pretty unique in the NBA. But, I think that it makes total sense to me why more people are playing that way. Because, a lot of the NBA is the four-around-one spacing with guys rolling to the rim. And if you got a big that can hold down the fort in there and you can keep your people in those four spots, I think that there's some validity to that. You got to be great cutting against it. You got to attack for layups and then get threes as a result of that. And I think that's we've been better at that this year, but every game's its own entity, and we'll see.
That's the head coach. Last night I was debating, we kind of ran out of time, but I was going to bring up Pride Night at the Garden, and I didn't for a couple of reasons, and I'm glad I didn't because it turns out you didn't even know, when we were talking about it. And then after the game, you had a really good answer as it pertained to your kids about having gone through that, the experience.
No, I just think it's great that we not only take the time to recognize but celebrate, whether it's Pride Night or different cultures or ethnic backgrounds, whatever the case may be, because I think that one of the great things about living in Boston, one of the great things about being a part of the NBA is how inclusive it is. And I'm really proud to be a part of the NBA and proud to be a member of the Celtics and get a chance to, experience that last night. And I wish I would have known before. Maybe I'll get included on the email next time.
It's a pretty easy one, right? It's harder to get off an email chain than it is to get on one, I would think, at the, those unsubscribed.
Could
things.
Be. I've got a really tricky email, though.
Yeah, I'll bet. But you know what? Let's stop there before it starts getting flooded. Celtics and the Heat next on the WROR Celtics Radio Network.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.